Welcome to Dugout Study Hall, a remedial course in baseball stats and proud member of the Pitcherless Podcast Network. I'm your host and expert layman, Matt Goodwin, and I am joined, as always, by your fake baseball economist, Alexander Chase. On this episode, we will talk about some random baseball things on our minds, current FIP leaders and why that's fun but doesn't matter, and how to use or not use FanGraphs dollar value calculators in season. But before we get to all of that, Alexander, how you doing?
You know, I am getting through it. It is not my best day. I feel like someone shot an arrow through my right eye, which they did not. My eyes are
sounds
fine.
Less than ideal.
Weird headaches. Not something I normally deal with. So I just feel like I should say that so when I'm oddly irritable about some random nonsense with my computer later, I have an out and it's not actually my fault.
I hear you on headaches. I'm lucky that I don't get them quite as often as I used to, but every now and then I will get one heck of a headache, and it's debilitating. And like after it stops hurting, it's exhausting. So all you headache sufferers out there, you know what I'm talking about. We all have some understanding of Alexander's situation, but he's pushing forward because we want to make sure that we have this stellar content for you. So he's going to soldier on. Speaking of soldiering on,
I have a bad joke we have to make. I feel like anytime someone says the word content, the only thing that can come to mind is the Bo Burnham inside sketch or bit. It's like, daddy made you some content open wide. And that image, having to conjure that up with my feeble little mind tonight, has instantly made any headache go away because it is scared of that thought. So
that's I was gonna say, Bo Burnham is, and I believe this is going to reveal a little bit of my age, he's like simultaneously for me like a genius and I don't get it. It's very interesting. I think that, like, from what I've seen of it, it's very clever and very engaging and not for me. Very clearly I am not his target audience. But kudos. I mean, he's obviously very successful. Anyway, we don't need to do 10 minutes on him, but I don't get it. Let's talk about just what's bouncing around in your head right now. A dangerous thing for us to do sometimes is to just randomly go inside our heads, but we'll limit it to the scope of baseball. What's the like random thing you're thinking about right now about baseball?
You know, I was listening to a podcast the other day that is very much like kind of the opposite in terms of the things they talk about. It's one of the more recent episodes of the podcast Tipping Pitches, which is very much like vibes and like labor politics of baseball. And they had someone pose a question for them. It's just like, who is like a cool and who is an uncool baseball player? And I don't think like that exact thought is the thing that's been rattling around, but it's like very much like a, you know, like what makes all of this fun? And like, how often does answering that question have like a single number attached to it, even at all? Often would you even try to answer that question by saying, and like the immediate first thing that comes to mind is like, so-and-so hits a lot of home runs or steals a lot of bases. And like, those are like the only numbers that I could even think that I would even bring up anywhere.
You wouldn't look up his fun plus? I think a lot of the electric players are ones who certainly are performing and doing cool things. You know, bombs and steals are exciting. And the quintessential like fun player comes to my mind is Acuna, and because he's good, but he's also really entertaining while he's being good. You know, there's that energy and that enthusiasm, which, to be fair, there are a lot of guys who are super good at baseball that may just like be more introverted. And it's not that they're not fun to have on your team. They're just not the guys making the funny faces at the camera. And we tend to notice the people making the funny faces at the camera. But that's the kind of thing that usually comes to my mind, is like, it's energizing. There's a shirt that there's no plug here. We're not getting any kickback, but RotoWear has a shirt. It's like an Acuna, but take on a NASA logo thing. And every time I see it show up in my inbox as like, hey, this is back in stock. If I was a Braves fan, I would have three already probably. But it's a cool little logo, and he's a fun guy to want to root for.
Yeah, I feel like the thing that kind of comes to mind here is like, I don't know that, like, based off of my memories as a kid and then, like, the last 10 years are different, that, like, Albert Pujols was, like, ever what I would remember as an outwardly fun player, but it had to be really fun to root for him. And, yeah, like, there are a lot of guys like that, I feel like, who are, like, you know, they do the really impressive stuff and they're good and they do the things that are fun to watch. Shohei Ohtani is really close to being in that category, except for then he just, like, smiles a little bit and then we're good.
And yeah,
he
does
just
do some interesting
fun
things though from time, like the clip that was making the rounds, he went out in between like a double header I think it was, and was like, I'm gonna learn a new pitch, I'm gonna invent a new pitch, not learn, invent. I'm gonna invent a new pitch, and he's throwing this like weird knuckleball looking thing out in the outfield just because he wanted to, like, that's fun. I don't know, that's he's a hard guy to root against in any way, shape, or form. You know, if you're, I guess, an Oakland A's fan, you don't want Shohei Ohtani to do well because it means the Angels are doing well. But, I mean, he's the kind of guy that baseball needs more of, and they need to do a better job of capitalizing on that, despite whatever that talking head said about how he can't possibly be the face of baseball, which is just a dumb thing.
Yeah, I mean, like, he's kind of got, like, a little bit of that, like, cold-blooded killer a little bit when he's like on the diamond, and then, you know, like, he walks off, he's a different person to an extent, and that's like, that is a kind of fun, right? And then you've got the guys like Acuna who, like, are fun the entire time, I think, and there's just like a little bit of a difference. I don't know, I think that's, it's kind of just like really tiny moments, but like, so are highlights.
Sure.
And all of that is to say, like, I think the other things that come to mind is, like, how are you going to be in a position to show off any sort of, like, joy or fun? It's, like, got to be the people who are, like, making the highlight plays. You don't get a whole lot of those in the outfield. You definitely don't get as many of those if you're DHing. I don't think that pitchers get to be fun in the same way. I don't know how to say that.
There's a lot of those, like, case struts. Those are kind of fun. That's kind of an interesting thing. But, yeah, it's fair. But to your point about how you see that, I think a lot of baseball is consumed in small bits right now. I don't think that the majority of people are sitting down and watching a single game start to finish. I think most people are seeing the highlights on their phone, maybe watching a couple innings of their favorite team. It's hard to build your evening around watching an entire game now. I mean, maybe it's just me and my stage of life, but the idea of being able to sit down at 7 o'clock and stay up till 11 to watch an entire game. I can't tell you the last time I was able to do something like that, but I get to see a lot of baseball in replays, or I flip around from game to game and watch what I can. And then, you know, obviously social media shares a lot of those fun moments, right? Cause that's what people want to see. That's what spreads. That's what winds up in your timeline. So those are the people that you see more, are the people who are engaging and doing fun things. So that makes a lot of sense.
Yeah. As someone who grew up watching a lot of like reruns of SportsCenter, if that makes sense, you know, like the 10 o'clock to 11 and then 11 to 12 o'clock hour, just being the same thing. Like all of the fun baseball clips, other than just like absolute towering, disgustingly huge home runs, are plays that shortstops make. So like, it's not surprising that like Javi Baez is a guy that we think of as a fun player. He's in the position to do all of the fun things, and then on top of that he does a bunch of extra stuff. Like, we're gonna notice all the cool things he does, whereas like, I don't know, like a Mookie Betts like laser beam from right field is rarer in opportunity, I guess. Now way more fun than I think we give it credit for, but like, yeah, so that's what's on my mind. The exact opposite of any of the like
analytics metrics stuff. That makes sense. We make a lot of time and space for that, so your random thoughts probably are going to be about that. My random thought of the evening, this is Wednesday that we're recording, is Pivetta just mowing down the Astros tonight. That was very surprising.
Red Sox revenge game.
So I guess the random thought in my head about that is the AL East is bonkers right now. The Yankees are unstoppable. The Red Sox are as bad as I thought they were going to be last year. The Blue Jays haven't been as good as I thought they were going to be. It's odd. It just seems like the beginning of this year has been bizarre world. And I'm very interested to see whether that normalizes to a certain degree or whether this is just going to be one of those years.
If you are willing to partake in such nonsense, I've seen more than a few things about the strength of schedule so far, in that the Yankees have been able to play the bad teams, like the Orioles mostly, and that the Blue Jays haven't. Like, the Blue Jays haven't played the Orioles yet, I think. And, yeah, like, they get really get backloaded all of their
and it's
games
May. I mean,
them.
So much can happen. Just as easily as you can win 14 in a row, you can lose 14 in a row. And then those things happen. And the Yankees have been a streaky team historically. And, you know, I don't have much hope for my Red Sox this year. And that's fine. But
yeah, I kind of agree with you there.
Well, and really, they shouldn't have been good last year either. So, I'll take last year. That was fun. That was exciting, kind of out of nowhere. And now we're getting what we probably should have gotten. And who knows? Again, it's May. They could turn it around and be at least fun to watch. I just don't think they're going to be able to compete in that division. But yeah, anyway,
we're not even at that, like, oh my God, the Nationals are so bad through 50 games from 2019 point of the season yet. Like, we're still not quite 2 weeks away, but like, about a week and change away when this comes out from those like 50 game marks. We'll be like a quarter of the way through the season pretty soon.
Yeah.
Which means we can start to think about how the season's going almost. Like, I'm like, yeah, it's happened. People have been good. But at this point, because we can't think about has a guy really been great so far, it has to come down to like the intrusive what makes fun sort of buzz.
yeah right
what else am I gonna think about, like, just stuff plus numbers, like
you could
I mean, there were other things that are normal and stable and stuff right now. There's actual conversation to be had. I think we might even have some of it today if we're lucky.
We're gonna try. Yeah that's the goal. On that note, let's move into our numbers of the week segment, and we're gonna do another little guessing game. This shouldn't take too long, and I think it's going to be a little bit of a fun thing, and maybe an opportunity for you to tease some stuff we're going to talk about next week in terms of pitchers and wonky stuff that's gone on there. But what I want to bring up for you, and I'm going to ask you to guess this time, I'm going to give you three guesses to try and get the number one person on this list. So hopefully I'm trying to set you up more for success here than I have in previous guessing games where I've basically assured your failure for our entertainment. I'm going to try and be nicer. So as it stands right now, there are five guys with a FIP of under 3. I just picked FIP because I wanted to. There's nothing more significant than that. But it will give you a chance to again talk about what do these numbers mean, what goes into them, whether we can trust them. Understanding what a metric is actually measuring is an important part of understanding how relevant it is. So five guys right now with under a 3 FIP, and I'm gonna give you a little bit of a hint is not the right word. what's the word I'm looking for? Clue? That's just another word for hint. But I'm going to give you some additional information. There's the leader is under 1. The leader is under 1, and I'm going to give you a chance to try and guess that player. And I'm going to give you 3 chances to get the right guy.
I agree that that's not really a hint, but it is like a hey, this guy's way off the charts, and so I should be looking for someone who's been way off the charts.
Because there's only 5 under 3, but this guy's under 1. So yeah, it is significant.
My first thought is jumping right to it. It's Kevin Gausman.
Yeah, you got it on the first try. I feel so happy for you.
I haven't looked it up,
because
but like,
I usually set you up for failure. So I'm very happy that we got there really, really fast.
This is one where it makes a lot of sense, I will say. So.
Yeah, so let me just go through the top 5 guys. And their numbers. And then I do want you to kind of talk about, like, is this fun with numbers that don't matter? Or is this something that we can look at? We certainly aren't really looking, as we talked about before, at like expected stats right now, right? Because there's some wonkiness there. And we'll talk about that a little later on, more with hitters maybe than with pitchers. Anyway, I digress. Number 5 is Dylan Cease. His FIP right now is 2.14. Oh, you know what? Something's going on here. There's a lot more guys than I had originally found. Maybe I clicked something, but anyway, I'm just going to give you the top 5. Dylan Cease, 2.14. Pablo Lopez, 2.11. Tariq Skubal, am I saying that right? I always feel like I'm saying it wrong. I'm sorry, Tariq. 2.07. Carlos Rodon, 1.61. And Kevin Gausman's at 0.82. So 0.82. Let's talk about him. Let's talk about Gausman. He's the number one. What does that mean? It doesn't matter. And does it translate to other pitchers that we're trying to understand at this point in the season?
So we're recording on Wednesday. We've said this for like a bajillion times. And I should note that the numbers that we're looking at here are good through Tuesday, which matters because Gausman is pitching tonight and gave up his first home run of the season against the Mariners to Cal Riley tonight. And that itself, like that coming across my timeline earlier today, was the number one thing that had me thinking that it has to be him.
Yeah.
The other thing that like really made it kind of like obvious to me that it would be him if I had to make someone be the obvious guy was that he went some ungodly stretch without giving up a walk. There were three. No, that's not fully true. There are four inputs to FIP. They're like the number of batters that you have faced, the number of strikeouts you have, the number of walks you have, and the number of home runs you have allowed. If those are the only three points of information that you have, Gausman has been striking out a lot of people and has given up like two combined walks and home runs through Tuesday, not including tonight. So yeah, he's going to look really good. I don't know if it's like exactly two, but he's like 0.4 walks per nine and zero home runs from nine. I'm guessing that's two. It's probably wrong. I can't.
So what would then be the jump? Like how susceptible to significant fluctuation is this number?
So I want to say that in Gausman's case, like I think you can believe that he's going to be really good this year. Like I'm not going to say a whole lot aggressively more than that, but like think about the things that you know have to be true if you're doing those things well. Like he's had essentially a 30 something percent strikeout rate over the past 3 years. We believe he's going to continue to strike people out. He was above average in the good way. You know, I guess his walk rate was below the MLB average. It's currently at like 1.1%. Yeah, it's probably not going to continue to be 1%, but if it's like under 5 rest of season, like the only other real ingredient is like how much people are going to tee off on him. And his stuff has been extremely hard to square up. He's done a pretty okay job all told at like limiting hard contact, limiting barrels. So far this year, he's looking at, what's that? I guess 4 barrels through 100 per 100 batters. He's given up 7 barrels this season. Now, because of the dead ball, that's led to very few home runs. And I will say that's actually part of the conversation on FIP versus XFIP versus XERA versus Sierra or whatever else that we kind of have to build in. And I want to talk about with regard to XFIP here, which is something that I kind of would be interested in peeking at for a couple of these guys in like normal circumstances. So like FIP takes your home runs. XFIP is like, hey, what if we just assumed an average home run per fly ball rate, which I don't really buy into, but like it's not a terrible assumption to try to guess how good you should have been and like take a decent-ish look into the future. XFIP is usually a little bit better than FIP at predicting the future. And like, yeah, like everybody at the top of the FIP leaderboard that you pointed out has like a minuscule home run to fly ball rate. They've got like a minuscule home run allowed rate in general, but like the balls aren't clearing the fences. So like,
yeah,
there is definitely a little bit of like, you can't regress it to whatever number they're probably regressing it to. Like, so my guess is if Gausman is doing all of the things that we'd want him to do and the ball doesn't leave the yard, like he's going to sustain a great FIP number and he's also going to be good in general. There are a couple other guys in this list that like I'm not 1,000% sure everything's going to hold in exactly the same way. I went ahead and, because it's no longer cheating, pulled the top of the list.
Yeah, let me clarify here. I don't know what I was doing. There are 17 guys that are under 3 in their FIP right now. I don't know how I messed that up, but the top 5 that I gave you are the correct top 5. I just don't know why I somehow thought they were the only 5. So that's a correction on my part. I don't know what I did. I apologize.
Yeah, I'm sure I could find a different inning pitched like bar to clear there
to make me right.
Yeah, we'll see. But yeah, I mean, like, the top five you've pulled, like, I'm intrigued, I will put it that way, to
well,
see
this list
how much
is...
things hold up for Martin Perez, who's, by the way,
right,
sixth on the list.
Like, yeah. Yeah, right, exactly. People, though, like Nestor Cortez, that's interesting to me. Max Fried, Logan Gilbert. Like, it does seem to be like a list of people that if you were just going to say, I'm going to give you the top 17 in a pitching category that's not like a closer, like save, that's not saves, right? It seems like a lot of these names, based on what they've done, belong here. So it doesn't seem like it's completely out of line. I guess what we're talking about here is that, is this more descriptive of what's happened rather than predictive of what's moving forward? And
yes,
I think that's really the important thing, right?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, like, if you scroll enough, like, it feels like we're looking at people who are good.
Right,
but, like,
right,
there are some people who are a little bit out of place on some of these.
Sure, absolutely.
And a lot of that will just be like the huge weight that the number of home runs you've given up has on your outcomes. For example, in the top 17, again through Tuesday, because I know that a couple guys have been on this list, only Corbin Burnes and Shane McClanahan have a home run per nine above one. You have to be Corbin Burnes or Shane McClanahan to have a FIP under three and be giving up more than a home run per nine. Like, that's about right.
Yeah, yeah.
So a lot of these guys will regress above that, and we would predict them to be 3.25 to 3.75 pitchers rest of the season, or maybe worse than that for a couple of these guys. Like, I'm not fully buying a couple of the people here.
Sure. Like, who? Seriously, name some names. We're not gonna...
Oh, yeah, yeah,
we might as well, right? Because I think it's informative. Like, it helps us to understand the concept.
Yeah, I feel like if I had to pick a name here, Miles Michaelis is not a guy that I expect this to carry in the same way. So part of that is he just doesn't strike anybody out, and I tend to not believe that things are sticky if you're not striking anybody out. The walks have been really low, and the balls haven't left the yard for him. Now, he plays in St. Louis, and St. Louis is a great place to be if you're trying to keep the ball in the yard. Like, the only people who can hit home runs there are people who are, like, freak specialists in pulling the ball down the line. And that's what Goldschmidt and Arenado are. Like, that's going to help him out. And also, like, the NL Central's, like, pretty friendly for you as well. But I just don't believe that if you're striking people out at the rate that he's striking people out at. And let me pull this just for my own edification. He's got an 18.7% strikeout rate so far this year. Yeesh. His K minus BB is at 14%, which is, like, pretty okay because he's not walking a lot of people out there, but, like, still, pass. I believe the other skills
will regress.
I don't
think a lot of people are running to the waiver wire because his FIP is, you know, top 20 right now.
Right.
I just think that these are good intellectual exercises for us to go. First of all, it's kind of fun to make you guess stuff, but I think informative to go through the process, because that's to make meaning of the numbers is kind of what we're trying to do here. And that's what people at home are trying to do.
I think that it's way more fun to figure out why the numbers are wrong as an intellectual exercise than it is to, like, just gawk at them and or predict who's got the good ones. Because, one, they're gonna be misleading in some way or another, and figuring out that information, I feel like, puts you on that part of the curve where it's like you can trust them because you know their limits, rather than putting way too much faith and then, like, feeling when you got burnt, like you got burned when you, like, really didn't. So we know what FIP is. It's imperfect and pretty fun, and kind of like a good basis of how good your performance has been for your team more than anything else.
Yeah, that makes sense. That's fair. All right. I want to talk about, in terms of kind of furthering this discussion, how to use FanGraphs and the projection systems that a lot of people use preseason to make decisions about like who you want to target, maybe trade value, and how we can use those and why we might be getting vastly different results from different systems. But before we get to that, we are going to take a very small break.
Hey, Alex Fast here, and thanks for listening to this podcast on the Pitcher List Podcast Network. If you're a fan, consider supporting all of us by getting a PL Plus subscription, where you're going to get an ad-free website and get access to our Discord, where you can talk to all of our podcast hosts and staff. Plus, you can hang out with our incredible Pitcher List community. It's basically a baseball sanctuary year-round for as low as $8 a month. You can sign up at pitcherlist.com/plus, and you're going to get your first month free with promo code podcast. Also, don't forget to check out everything else we do as well, from YouTube videos, live streams, newsletters, off-season articles, TikToks, breakdowns, over 15 baseball podcasts on our network. We can't stop talking about baseball, even during the off-season. So sign up for PL Plus today at pitcherlist.com/plus and use promo code podcast to get your first month free. All right, thanks for listening. Let's get back to the show.
And we're back. So, Alexander, what I'm really looking at here comes from an actual experience that I had in a home league. I was working with somebody on a trade, and Byron Buxton and Carlos Correa were at the center of the deal, certainly not one for one, but and I was trying to get a handle on and also explain why my point of view on valuation. So I thought Fangraphs would be a good place to go and use kind of that system that I used at the beginning of the year to kind of get not only dollar values, but also dollar values that were customized to our league settings, which I think is a really powerful and important element. And I wound up with these vastly different numbers. I'm actually going to go to the sheet that I wrote. I didn't write this down for our episode. This is what I was using to try and figure out what it is that I wanted to do. So in ATC, I used ATC, and it put Buxton as a $27 player and Correa as a $14 player ish, closer to 15. The bat X had Buxton at 26.8 and Correa at 12.2, and it felt to me like those were probably preseason numbers.
I can verify ATC has to be, because they haven't updated in season.
Right. And so I clicked the drop down and I looked at the options for ROS, rest of season projections. And there was really only the bat and steamer in terms of trying to be consistent with what I'd used preseason. Right. Mm-hmm. I used those preseason. I think that there might be a zips in there, but I didn't use that before. And so between the bat rest of season and steamer rest of season, there was one of them had them at about equal, at about $10 each. And another had Buxton at a $30 player and Correa at a less than a $4 player. So here, that's the premise. Nobody at home cares about what happened with my trade. I get it. That's fine. What I'm doing is kind of setting up the premise for the proof of concept of how do we use this in a meaningful way? Why would systems spit out numbers that are so vastly different? And does that mean that we can or cannot use these to try and do things like value players when we're making trades? How can we be smart about this without falling into a trap?
So, Correa is a guy that I'm going to kind of like cordon off as someone who has surprised me this year and done some things I didn't expect. And I feel like Buxton probably has to fit in that category at all times, period. As
if
a
he's
person
playing,
who,
right?
not just, well, you know, you bring up that. So I pulled up both Buxton and Correa's pages, and they're both on the same team right now, which doesn't fit in my mind because Correa is not a twin in my mind until he is, I guess. But yeah, they're both teammates who have both missed some time from injury this year and who are both projected to play roughly 100 games rest of season. When you brought up this comparison, my first thought was like, oh, I bet one of these systems is broken on playing time.
That's what I was thinking, is that like maybe Byron Buxton's injury projections had not been prorated for the rest of the season. And since he hasn't really missed that much time in his world anyway, that it was all kind of being squished into the rest of the season. And they were expecting that, you know, he wouldn't play. But if you're saying he's projected for 100 games, that can't be it, right?
Well, that means he's projected to miss about 20 more games this season from rest, from injury, you know, roughly in that bucket. Same thing for Correa. I think those both sound reasonable, by the way. And depending on your league settings, in terms of like how you make moves, If people are making choices based off these sorts of things, this is the sort of tool where I feel like just hit that experimental button. However, in this case, that won't explain their differences here. So I want to kind of cordon off that playing time thing as like, you know, we've talked about that a lot in past places, you know, like,
sure,
it's hard to project it. I think that these are about as reasonable as you get. By the way, out of all of the rest of season systems, we have Steamer, we have Bat, we have Bat X, we have Zips, and we have Fangraphs depth charts. Zips is the one that will be way outlier on some weird stuff because it's willing to take some risks. It projects Buxton for 72 games played rest of season. I think that's bad. I don't think that's accurate.
It feels to me like
a good model.
Yeah, it feels to me like they projected him to miss, I don't know, let's say 35 games, right, at the beginning of the year.
50 more games
or whatever,
50 games to miss this year.
Right, and then he hasn't, normally at this point in the year, he's missed X percent of those already and hasn't. And so that total hasn't come down and it's just stayed the same. And it hasn't been adjusted for the fact that he's actually played healthy for him the first quarter of the season. That was my first inclination. So you bring up the Bat X, so let's maybe take a small aside and then bring this back to where we were. How do you feel about using the Bat X for anything right now since it bakes in expected stats?
I am generally fine with it.
Normally
I'm trying to compare
it, by the
players,
way,
right?
Yeah.
It's broken in the same way for everyone, right?
Sure.
And like, I'm not like gonna panic about it. I feel like it's also a case where like, I want to know what it's doing, but like, it's been the most accurate. And I think that assuming that like, with a couple outlier players who I kind of know what I'm getting anyway, it's probably gonna be pretty accurate. So I actually want to kind of like spit out kind of like the general differences between some of these systems for Buxton and Correa, just kind of like help paint a picture here. Correa is, depending on who you ask, the Zips Steamer crowd are projecting him for about like 18 more home runs rest of the season, 140s WRC plus, strikeout rate under 20%, walk rate of about 10%. The strikeout and walk numbers are pretty much the same across the board. The difference is the Bat and the Bat X, which actually look identical here, basically, like small differences, but like pretty much identical, have him like on a couple fewer games, like 40 fewer plate appearances and like 14 fewer home runs. I think that's projecting him to be a little bit worse. His WRC plus for them is, instead of being in the 140s, about like 135-ish, but like a little bit worse, playing a little bit less. And like, it kind of just pushes it all down. So it's got like a kind of like a knock on effect of taking him in this case where I pulled it. So I have by the way, when you just like open up the Fangraphs auction calculator, the default settings are like NFBC 12 team, like two catcher, except like the bench players are wrong, but that actually doesn't mess with their formula. So like, if you just click it and then you change your projection to whatever projection system, you're looking at what we would be looking at.
Right.
The Bat X, which again, be about the same for the Bat, has him as, and I got to find
just
this
clarify
again,
for a second,
down.
Which player are we talking about? Just Correa. It's easy to, Correa. It's easy to lose track.
Not a him,
we,
a Correa.
Yeah, we overuse the pronoun. So we're looking right now at Correa.
Yeah, projects him for like $1.5 rest of season.
Yeah.
The 26th most valuable shortstop. I think that's a bunch of playing time stuff, but like, if you look ahead of him, a lot of people are only projected for maybe at 50 more plate appearances than him max, and then once you get up to like 16 or so where they've got Semien, he's like 100 more plate appearances. So a little bit of his injury, I will say, dropping him down the value, but a lot of it is just like they don't think he's going to be that great. Whereas if you swap things over to Steamer, right, which I think I generally like to look at Steamer rest of season, and it's interesting, at least they think he's like totally fine and gonna be, what is it, the 12th most valuable shortstop rest of season, putting him actually roughly around Polanco and Semien, you know, like kind of in that top 100s range still. So I'm curious about like the different things that could be going into why they're shaped the way they are, and I'd like to offer up some hypotheticals here that I think could be it to a degree.
it would not surprise me, first and foremost, if the Bat and the Bat X, but especially the Bat X, are a little bit more reactive to in-season data because they're using stuff that stabilizes faster and so should believe that they can make adjustments faster. That would be the reason why Correa's value would drop for them. And on the flip side, increase for Buxton, who's, by the way, sitting at like a 190 WRC plus right now. The Bat and Bat X both project him for like a 170 or so rest of season WRC plus. They're projecting him for 32 home runs rest of season in the Bat. That would be
That's a very high number.
That would be a 43 home run season in 125 games.
Right.
That is what they are projecting him for.
I think that number is a reasonable number for if he plays 150, 155 games. 125 games, that's an awfully high projection. But
I should note, in 25 games, he has 11. If he plays but four more times at 30 home runs does not seem crazy to me.
No, it just doesn't seem like a sustainable pace. But yeah, you're right. That's what the math says right now, and that could be impacting that projection. I found it to be very interesting that these systems were all over the place, and not so much just to try and understand these two players, but to try and understand the reliability of this information for anybody looking up any player. So if you were going to go and try and figure out the value of player X right now, what would, let's workshop this. This is not planned. This is not in our rundown.
Right.
What would you do? Where would you go? And if you got something that looked wonky, what under the hood would you be really looking for to try and find the narrative to think something's broken here for right now for some reason, or this seems to be kind of pointing at something legitimate?
Okay, so I think that we have all of the tools on a place like FanGraphs to kind of just do the really quick stuff because it's all in place. So right. I'll be honest, that's where I would go. I've got some home-baked tools. I don't ever use them on the fly like this. They're almost all draft prep stuff. Like, if you're a subscriber to another place, by the way, I know that there are a lot of like subscription-based services. Let's see if my cat like bumps my microphone. Apologies if she does. She just got really
interested in
seeing.
If you hear some purring, that's, yeah.
I know that there are some places that do some really interesting dynamic updates. I'm going to withhold some information here about about fun new news, but y'all will know on our feed on Friday what I'm referring to here. But there are places out there that will give you that sort of information that kind of dynamically adjust in season along with the dollars adjusting when you look at players' pages and stuff like that. I think that's a cool idea that people should be trying to do. But like, can you give me a top 100 player that you're interested in so that we can truly do this in this like organic, I have a question sort of way?
Okay, you want me to find the player? I think you should pick. You should go because you're going to be doing the digging. So you should be digging into something you're interested in.
I think a guy that is probably a little bit confusing and that would yield some very different outcomes, if I just had to guess, and I will guess, is Christian Yelich. And I think that that's like a name that some people might be curious about. I'm curious about him. Like, is he back? Is a real question. And yeah. I would suspect that different projection systems are going to have some different thoughts on him. So I just pulled this page up and they're a little bit more in agreement than I thought they would be, but I actually kind of like that. So let's talk through it really quickly. He has, over the past 3 years, oh my goodness, he's currently has a 120 WRC plus, which is the best of his past 3 years. He's been sitting about 110 for 3 years. So the steals this year are on a prorated basis, definitely up. The home runs are on a prorated basis, definitely up. But I think that a lot of systems weren't projecting him to be his last year self. He's on pace for pretty much, no matter where you look, 18 to 20 home runs over 500 to 475 ish games with about 10 to 13 steals. The batting average will change pretty dramatically depending on whether or not you're using a Derek Cardi product or not. But that's the sort of guy where there's probably a little bit of wiggle and they're all just going to be reacting. Cardi's products like him better. So Bat X likes him most, Bat likes him a little bit better, and then Steamers like more down. And I think that's very much just like this system. As best I can tell, I don't know how they change in season, like as a weight, but I can probably pull up like eight more of these people and like workshop this hypothesis, they're probably buying the season's data more quickly. So if you're seeing those differences, that's what it is. So if I wanted to put a dollar amount in him, yeah, I would do exactly what you had done earlier. I would go into Fangraph's auction calculator. I'd type in my league settings. And then I would look at, I would click outfield, right? And like pull the, like where he is on the outfield list. And then like I would look at where that it is and think, okay, these projection systems all are in kind of agreement. Maybe I could see him going up a couple places. Maybe I could see him going up down a couple places. But I have, because the confidence intervals seem kind of tight on who he's going to be rest of the season, pretty good idea that he's going to be. And I'll go back to where we had been earlier for I have in front of me first Steamer. They have him as outfielder. See how far I have to scroll. 21 for about $12. The $12 doesn't mean as much as maybe him being right next to, I'll give the couple guys around him, Starling Marte, Whit Merrifield, Marcell Ozuna, Teoscar Hernandez, Tommy Edman, Brian Reynolds, Nick Castellanos, and like kind of in like that band around him. So like, yeah, he's about what we thought he would be if he was himself. He's kind of been not fully himself, but like better.
Right.
And he has been a little bit better and things look up. So like, I think no matter what, no matter which projection system I click on, and I'm going to click on a couple of them just to see what happens here, we're going to get roughly the same sort of thing. So I'm going to click bat, and I'm going to assume he's going to be somewhere around 20s, or like the 20th best outfielder. 13, okay. But like $14, he's just a couple more bucks. Yeah.
Sure, okay. but other people changed more if he jumped up a bunch of spots, right?
He didn't change much in terms of the dollars, actually. And that's a thing I want to focus on.
Well, that's what I'm saying. He didn't, but other people around him must have for him to move up 8 spots, right?
But you say that he moved up 6 spots. He moved up $3, right? There was a whole tight band of people being the difference between
like 12
and
21. Okay, so you're saying that this system is maybe clustering people a little bit more?
Well, yeah, they both cluster a lot of people in that range.
Yeah.
There's not a big difference.
So the ranks don't mean necessarily as much as the tiering, which is why dollar values are good, because it can show you where there's gaps or where things are a little bit more tightly banded.
Exactly. Yeah. Wow. Just like,
I have another name for you. I have a name that I want you to look up, because I feel like this might really show some discrepancies in, because we had preseason expectations that I think are very different from the reality right now. That's Alec Bohm.
That is a really good name.
Very curious to see how these systems are handling him and whether or not somebody who is playing differently than expected, whether that's better or worse, is going to be more susceptible to these wide variations, which doesn't really explain why, I guess. Well, I guess it does a little bit for Correa, because he's kind of been a little up and down. He's changed his scenery, so people might have had different ideas about what he was going to be able to do. But right now, I'm really just talking to give you a chance to pull up Alec Bohm.
I've had him up for a second.
Perfect. I think it's an excellent case. And maybe I'm wrong, but I'm hopeful.
Wow. Okay. So I'm going to give him you his line, and I'm going to give you a couple details about his line, and I'm going to say that I'm very surprised by this, actually. He's only has 2 home runs this year. He has 2 home runs. He's batting second for that Phillies lineup. He's got like a total of 32 runs in RBI through yesterday, over 126 PA. You multiply 32 by, I'm going to call it 5. And what, that's like 100 and let's, well, he's moved up in the order. So I would put him at like 170 rest of season. And bet like all these systems then have him roughly at about 100 RBI and runs rest of season. I want to note that that's a huge difference, and that is absolutely why I wouldn't be trusting a single one of these numbers. Just strictly based on he's playing well. He's got like a 117 WRC plus. He is hitting the ball extremely well. He's like top 20 in hard contact rate. And the walk rate hasn't been fantastic. So like, there's questions for me about how this all sticks necessarily, but like, he's consistently doing pretty good things, and I definitely think he could maintain a pretty decent lineup spot in what should be a strong lineup. And the problem for him has just been the loft, but that's always been. But like, still, he's
well. That's what I was gonna say. It almost seems like he's been taking a slightly different approach. I was actually gonna go, if you have it in front of you, I was gonna try and look at ground ball rate.
Yeah, I'm going to pull that up as well.
Because I think that's, but most importantly, I don't want to move off of him without looking at what different systems say, because that's really, we're kind of looking at like, is this a tight formation on the different systems around Alec Bohm, or is there this wide variation? And what does that tell us about how they're dealing with him being different than maybe expected going into the season?
I'm going to start with the bat stuff, having pulled up his Savant page. He's got a huge line drive rate right now, and he's got a career low fly ball rate, actually. Now, those fly balls and line drives together are good. Like, the ground balls are technically down, but he hasn't really changed his, like, batted ball profile. He's just hitting the ball more, which is good. If you cut your strikeout rate 10% from last year, like, even if it's still the same ground ball rate, that's more fly balls. That's more things going well. He's actually, I could see him being a person who's like WRC plus could tick down on just the merits of like fewer line drives, right? But like, he still is a confusing guy in that regard. That's really interesting.
Yeah, he is very interesting. Case, this wasn't so much about nailing down what Alec Bohm is going to be, more about like, how are the systems handling somebody who's complicated,
right? And when you say that, then I'm like, okay, there's a bunch of differently misleading or not misleading data on him, right? Is his performance deserved or not? And yet, like, basically everyone's all roughly the same within one or two runs in RBI. They all got like the same stolen base projection, roughly the same playing time and home run projection, which I think the playing time's too low. I think he's going to play more than that. And I had it pulled and I wanted to make sure I could ignore it before I come back to it. I have the bat rest of the season, which is totally representative. They have him as the 29th best third base eligible player, a negative player in 12 team leagues. Like, do not roster. Even with gigantic benches, they have Hunter Dozier, Brad Miller, Jaime Candelario among the names ahead of him.
It doesn't jive. It doesn't seem to make sense. So
right. And that would tell me then, like, things have not reacted even to his just mostly better state of being. So in that case, like, I think part of that is like, there haven't been that many home runs, so they're probably not adjusting like the big juicy fantasy stat thing that we would actually hope him to produce. And the question of whether or not that should be true or not is a good one. But like, if you look at his projected batting average, right, his strikeout rate's cut. They haven't projected that his strikeout rate will follow too far. They're projecting him for like 23% rest of season, and so that means he's all like a 260-ish hitter rest of season. He's batting 313 again. I don't think it fully can keep up, but like, wouldn't surprise me if career long he's the sort of guy who's good at hitting line drives, relatively speaking, and he could be a guy who bats 290. But like,
yeah,
that's conjecture. We don't know.
Sure, right.
He's making
right.
changes.
And try and bake that stuff in. It's just, yeah, it's, I guess, if
I'm
we go back to our central,
I'm agreeing with you, right?
Yeah, right. If we go back to the central question, is like, can we use this information? The answer, I guess, right now is only kind of. Right.
I mean, yeah. I think the other piece of like thing that they are, or the other thing they were kind of relying on here is just like, it's early. Things will be different than they are right now. How much we can jump on a hot start. Now, I'm going to be jumping on a hot start that involves a strikeout rate dropping 10%, especially for a guy who was drafted in the top five of his like draft class and who is known for having good contact abilities. Like, that's the sort of thing where I would be believing these things. I believe these things about Andrew Vaughn, who is even less major league time than him and dropped his strikeout rate 10% in the middle of the season last year. So like, that is the one thing where I would be most perplexed if things aren't adapting, but like, how would they know that? Right.
Sure.
I'm
really
perplexed because I'm biased to think they should be.
I'm not blaming the systems. I think this is a flaw of trying to use math to capture humanity. You're going to wind up with these types of things in every system. And to your point before, too, they're not designed to be right at the edges, right? Like, here's my analogy. Social studies teacher, maps are distorted, right? They're the most accurate in the center. As you get to the edges and the fringes, they're more and more distorted. That's why Greenland always looks like it's four times larger than it actually is, because it's the edge. So the same thing sort of happens with these systems, right? They're trying to be right in the middle and within a standard deviation or two, right? Anything that's beyond that is going to kind of mess with the system because they're extreme inputs, whether it's the top end or the bottom end. And maybe Bohm is just that because he's doing things so differently than he's done. And that's fine. But as a case study of why these things are coming out with such discrepancies, I think it does prove the point that you can look at these things to maybe get parameters. Definitely make sure you're looking at a couple of systems, play around with the experimental checkbox to see if that makes a significant difference. Make sure your leak settings are accurate. And then you're going to have to go back to those player pages and look at things like line drive rate, ground ball rate, maybe even launch angle, hard contact, those types of things to see if there's something different in the profile that would maybe explain what is going on. And then maybe you can believe more on the high end. If you're seeing much the same player with much better results, then maybe the systems that are not as responsive to that new input are going to wind up being closer to reality and you're more on the low end. So there's no way that we're ever going to get a formula that spits out the right thing to do. You've got to manage your own team. But I think this is a little bit more complicated and complex to try and use than simply just going to these projection systems like you would preseason and have them spit out these numbers based on the projection themselves. And it's a little tidier preseason.
Right. I think also like it's important to know that like if a product like this that's supposed to be pretty straightforward and easy to use was telling you that you need to be selling off Teoscar Hernandez for a guy drafted like 250. Like, I don't think that they would be trusted. You're 100% spot on with that maps comparison. I really like that. You know, when I think about the sort of people where I believe that the changes are legit, that they have to be a bit better, and that we also have a ton of data on them, like, there aren't that many people that I'm like, this guy should change. Like, I think about Gene Segura, who I think I've noted in some trivia and some tweets. Maybe we talked about it last week. I can't remember. Is like top five in hard contact rate. Gene Segura. Like, that's shocking to me. I think Baseball Prospectus wrote about him today. We'll probably see some more pieces. He's playing really well. Got a 140 WRC plus, 6 home runs so far. He's projected for 11 rest of season and like 3 times or more PAs. Like, that's the sort of guy where if you're using these tools, like, they're gonna tell you he's not worth that much. If you want to send to your team, to your league mate, that Gene Segura is not supposed to be that good the rest of the season, to go snap him up, like, go for it. I would. It's been redraft. I absolutely would. Like, it seems like the sorts of things that stabilize quickly in season are like going to show a different reality than maybe some of these projection systems are designed to. If you're like being really bleeding edge, I want to trust it. And like, to be clear, you have to just want to trust it a little bit to believe that someone who is 32 years old is just like suddenly like one of the most consistent like creators of like hard hit like
he had talking about better than Michael Burnley
sort of stuff.
Yeah, earlier on, and then kind of turned back into a pumpkin, and then suddenly, yeah, I don't know. That's what makes this fun, right? Is that these sort of things just pop up, and we've got to try and understand it. I want to move into an off the books segment because I think this is worth talking about. And you, as our resident former Oriole fan, have we fully converted to the Nationals?
Oh yeah. Well, I think more importantly, I am fully converted to not the Orioles.
Fully converted to not the Orioles. Okay, fair enough. Alexander is a free agent fan.
I'm a Nats fan, but I would say I am more vigorously not an Orioles fan in the conversion process here.
I understand. So now that we've nailed down the scale of fandom for Alexander, I do want to bring up the changes that have happened at Camden Yards, because this is a thing and it's a significant thing, and we've got 10, 15 minutes here where we can talk about it. If there's that much to talk about, but we're going to do this by way of Aaron Judge, who I always want to call Mike Judge in my head. I don't know why. The creator of Mike Stanton Butthead cannot hit bombs. What's that?
Is it the Mike Stanton thing?
I don't know.
Mike Stanton was for a little bit.
I know. I don't know. I think maybe it's just a malfunction in my brain. But Aaron Judge, quote, was pretty upset after Camden Yards' new left field wall. He had 2 home runs and it cost him a third. And this is a quote from Aaron Judge. "It's a travesty, man. I'm pretty upset. It just looks like a create a park now." Which begs two questions. One, what's going on with this wall and is it significant? And two, what the heck is Create a Park? Is this a thing that I should know about and don't?
I'm going to answer the second question first. Yeah, he's like talking about like, I don't know, probably like a video game-ish sort of outlook where you like you go in and you adjust the walls and like you do whatever you want. You know, it's like scale things back so my team's better.
Okay. I thought like this was Create a Park like trademark, like TM, right? Like like it was Legos for making baseball stadiums, I mean, or yeah, or something.
And that's kind of like the accusation, right? Is they're just like kind of messing with things because they decided they wanted to like have a slightly different park, right? And I gotta say,
do we spend billions on a new park, or do we just create a crazy left field situation, right?
And yeah, yeah.
Now it's new for a bargain price.
Yeah, I mean, like, there's been a good amount of writing about like how Camden Yards is kind of like the beginning of like the cozy park, and like for better and for worse, things are kind of moving in some different directions. I'm definitely in the y'all are cowards kind of camp on that. Diggers are good. Instead of complaining that your left field wall is the reason why you can't develop pitching, maybe you should just like hire people who can like develop pitching. Like, that's kind of how I feel about this towards the Orioles.
And it's not like nobody's ever been a good pitcher in Camden Yards.
Yeah, so even beyond that, it's not like that. Like teams haven't created good pitchers in poor ballparks. Like the Cincinnati Reds right. have developed plenty of good pitchers,
right?
In spite of themselves for other reasons. So like that's not the problem, and that's like a whole separate conversation that is like nowhere near as absolutely shocking and horrific. Like Kevin Gausman, by the way, former like fourth overall pick by the Orioles, bad for them, now looks awesome. That whole transformation about how terrible they are, nowhere near as shocking as the results in the left field wall when you like add in the ball being dead. So a really fun thing that you can do in StatCast search, here we are talking about StatCast search stuff again, is you can actually sort batted balls by their launch direction. And so what I did is, you know, like you can think of baseball diamond as like, you know, it's like a quarter of a circle, right? So I've like taken the left third of it using like their ability to split it off that way. And I'm using that as like an imperfect, but like good enough if we're being realistic proxy for balls hit to left field. And I wanted to get just like a couple different ways of looking at it. So I went with the most basic. Last year, out of 2,962 batted balls hit to that, you know, like slice third of the field.
Right? Yeah.
There were 99 home runs. This year, in roughly a quarter of a season, a little bit less, there have been three.
Three.
There have been three. That's wow. Enough that I can click on it and we can look at it. I want to see who has the honor of being part of that. I guess I have to reload this page almost. Something must be off because I can't even click on it properly. Yeah, I can't even get details for them for some reason. Huh. Yeah, it's horrifying. I will pull that up later. Yeah, like that's horrifying. There's no other way around it.
Well, so I guess mission accomplished for what they were trying to do, but why? Like, I just don't...
Yeah, so I'm going to pull something else while I'm sitting here because I can, right? And I'm going like, to...
That's affecting your team significantly more than it is every other team because you play half your games there.
Right. Yeah.
Is it helping like, your pitchers more than it's hurting your hitters?
I think that's a good question. I decided just like for fairness sake to pull it for like the rest of the park. There were 183 home runs to the rest of the park last year. There have been 22 home runs to that part. So multiply it roughly by 4.5 and you get like 60% of the home runs in the rest of the park. So instead of it dropping 97%.
So home runs are down in general, which is something we've been talking about anyway, right? Early in the season, colder weather, dead ball. But still, it's still... The explanation for the three versus the whatever that other number is not just that. It's very clearly that the change has significantly impacted the ability to hit home runs to that part of the stadium.
Yeah, basically like 1 in 33 batted balls last year was a home run in Camden Yards. This year, if you're hitting it to straightaway center or right field, it's about 2% of batted balls. If you're hitting it into that one quarter, it's 1 in 200 is roughly what we're looking
Yikes.
At. I would love to be able to pull that for all of the other teams, just kind of like see what it is, and probably will later on when I've got some time. But I think that's just a really good way of horrifyingly putting it. Yes, we deserve Aaron Judge home runs. I think like it's almost like they just saw like the Gleyber Torres 2019, and they're like, we want to make sure that no one can ever hit that many home runs in our stadium again, including our own players. So
yeah,
I've actually want to take this in like a kind of interesting direction. Like, I believe the humidor thing gets sorted out. I think we get back to what I would call like the 2017 ball in the long run.
Okay.
Like, not the truly dead, but not truly juiced. I think that, like, this is too far for most people, and it's been shocking, and I wouldn't myself be shocked if things turn around a little bit.
Well, they turned two dials down, right? They changed the ball, and they played with the humidity of it. So to fix one should help find at least somewhat of a balance.
Right. I think that they can also play with the humidor settings. We've talked a little bit about how they set the humidor settings a little bit too aggressively. Right. I think they can change that in the long run pretty easily. And I think they probably do. But like all that separately, like, I don't think that fence is going to get moved back immediately by any executives in Baltimore. So if you're someone who rosters any right-handed Orioles prospects, are you selling right now? I don't know that I am based off of that alone, but like Jordan Westberg is a guy that I have on a roster that I'm like excited about in real life and think will become a fine baseball player. I'm worried that he's not going to hit a single home run.
Yeah, I mean, that's they actually have a pretty nice farm system. That's an excellent question. I never even really thought about
it. A lot of them are lefties. A lot of their big players, like Gunnar Henderson, I think, is a lefty.
I was just looking him up because I have him.
Adley's a switch hitter, lefty, so he's unaffected for the most part. You know, 70% of the time, he is aiming for the right field porch, which is a great place to sit and watch a game, by the way. I'm a Camden Yards fan still, despite these changes. like you can run down the list, but like Westberg is in particular a righty. He's a shortstop prospect, right? Most shortstops are righties. It's as rare that you aren't. Like third baseman, maybe that lefty a little bit more, but like not tremendously more. So yeah, like that's Kobe Mayo, I think it's lefty as well. Let me look that one up. That's like my other one I'm curious about because infielder, you know. Kobe Mayo bats. I'm sure y'all live for this. he's another bats righty guy that I'd be a little bit concerned about, but he's like a 70 grade raw power guy. So maybe he gets a few out over that fence still. Yeah. So that's the sort of thing where I'd be a little bit worried.
And we also have the rest of the season to play out there. Like you said, if these are, I think what would be interesting to see, which we're not, is how much, by how much some of these balls that have gotten close have missed. Would a 10% shift in the humidity of the ball that added 9 feet of the 15 that have been lost back, suddenly that three home runs turns into 11?
I would note, right? It's like, not 15 feet that are gone in that wall. It is functionally 50 feet.
Okay.
Because of like, the height change and everything else. That's awful.
Yeah. That's bad, right? So as the season plays out, even if they make those humidor shifts or whatever the case may be, we're going to get a full season's worth of data to be able to see, like, what did they really do here? Just for clarity's sake, did they move it in and make it higher?
Yes. Yeah, it's like it's like the seats were sloped, right?
Back.
So okay. It's like they just took a big knife and, you know, we're 10 rows deep, the seats are higher up. It's just like, all right, that's where the wall is now.
So back and up. So yeah. I think you're right. I don't think that they're going to make this change back if for no other reason than to not acquiesce that they did something bad. What you may see is it creep lower, right? Because they could.
I don't think they can do that easily, though. Because like they'd have to change like the entire slope of like
just like in the middle of the night, somebody sneak in and lower it a little bit so that a few more home runs go over without them having to say that they had to change it or adjust it. I think in terms of like if you're rostering prospects in a dynasty league, it's probably something to pay attention to. I don't think it necessarily kills value, although it might be something to ask. You know, like what are Clegg and Cross doing with that? You know, is that something that they're factoring into their ranks? Or even like Huth, you know, people who are doing that sort of evaluation. And in 3 years, 4 years, when this is relevant, is there going to have been a change by that point? You know, maybe not for next season, but maybe there's some sort of middle ground. There's a middle ground with the ball. There's a middle ground with the fence. We wind up in a middle area that's tolerable. But right now, you're right. That's a significant impact and something to be on the radar. That really kind of brings us to the end of our rundown, Alexander. Any last minute random baseball thoughts or wrap ups that you want to throw in here?
I will say it's weird that the Yankees have been part of two different like complaining about park dimensions controversies so far in this young season. I really want to know what the next one is going to be for them. Are they going to like complain about Coors Field somehow? That seems like it's too obvious, right? It's got to be something really particular and really stupid, but like out of division is my thing that I would suspect. Are they going to complain about like?
Do the Astros still have that hill? I don't think they do.
No, right? They don't.
They get rid of that. Yeah,
I don't think that's what they complain about.
That seems like the kind of thing though that like you know Judge will plop one on a hill like that and be like, well, the fence should be in front of it. All of this stuff. Listen, both teams are playing on the same field. We're talking about rostering players in Dynasty. So that context is lifted, right? You want to know what your player is going to be able to do, where it's relevant. But in terms of like winning and losing baseball games, everybody's on the same field at the same time doing, you know, like it's Aaron Judge can be upset that it took a home run away from him. Sure. But in the same game, did it rob one of the Orioles as well? It may have. I don't know. I didn't see the game, but it's all relative to the moment. The reason we get riled up about these things is because it's taking away stats and counting stats from our fantasy matchups. You know, that's a more significant impact to us than it is to the team on the field. You're all playing on the same field. Same thing at Yankee Stadium. Look, the short porch is there for your team too. So I don't know. Take advantage of it.
Yeah. I think that's fair. And of course, that means that something stupid will happen. Mind you, I will say the first of those controversies, it was of the Rangers' own doing. So again, we got to find another new way to talk about something stupid other than like who's good at baseball.
Imagine in a press conference, somebody not trying to find some random thing to blame a losing a game on. Like, hey, we went out there, we did our best, they beat us. That's what happened. The dimensions had nothing to do with it. You know, they put a couple more balls in play than we did, whatever. Like, just I don't know, it feels like we've shifted to like everything has to have a reason and an excuse that's outside the team or outside the purview of the manager or whatever. Just look, we went out there, we did what we were supposed to do. They executed a little bit better here and there. They won the game because of it. Like tomorrow, we're going to go back out there and try again. Like, what's wrong with that? I don't understand. But
I think Aaron Boone got too many participation trophies as a kid, and
I'll never forgive him for the 2003 ALCS. So, on that note, Alexander, that does bring us to the end of this episode. If you could remind the people where they could find us,
well, they can find you on Twitter at The Corked Matt. I'm on Twitter at Chase_rate. And most importantly, you can find our podcast on Twitter at Dugout Study Hall, where you can send us some questions. Please be sure to subscribe to the Pitcherless podcast feed if you haven't done that already. Leave us a good review if you can be so kind. And if you're not already, please consider becoming a PL Plus member so that you can harass us on the PL Discord. And that's it for me.
All right. Well, thanks for listening, everybody, and we'll catch you next time.